We're called to make sacrifices. We're called to suffer. We're called to place things, you know, to let go of things if it means living in the kingdom way. But if it's doing so in a way that someone's not thriving and is actively like being brought down and hurt and harmed, then no one's thriving. Like that, we can pretend all day, but no one's thriving.
You're listening to the Pocket Pulpit Podcast with Sarah Kinzer and Hector Martinez, part of the TCD Podcast Network.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode. You know, it would be really cool if we did like snippets every day, but you'd probably get tired of that. So welcome to another episode of the Pocket Pulpit, where we explore and where we just contemplate social media ministry, the internet. What is the internet? No, but seriously, what is online ministry? Who can do it? How is it done? What are some best practices? Are there best practices? Is it a real thing? Does it even matter? Right? So many questions that like, anyway. So Sarah, what are we talking about today regarding online ministry? That was a big jump. That was a really big jump. Let's go back. Let's back up. Hey, everyone. Welcome once again to the Pocket Pulpit Podcast, part of the church.digital network. You heard that already in the intro, but that's okay. We love the network. It's such a great network of people who are exploring online ministry, digital ministry, virtual reality ministry, video game ministry, so many different ministries, but all tied to one thing, which is the gospel and the kingdom and what it looks like to build the kingdom together in those spaces. What a great network to be a part of. Hey, if you haven't, go and check out the network. And what is the Pocket Pulpit? Well, we say this every week, but the Pocket Pulpit, we just want to explore. Sarah and I just want to explore what it is to do ministry in social media spaces, and how that can be done well. Can it be done well? And obviously we believe that it can, or else we would have ended this podcast. But Sarah, what are we discussing today?
Well, we don't have a guest today, so it's a Hector and me conversation, which I like talking to Hector, so it'll be fun for me.
It'll be fun for me too. Just like a clear, I just want to make sure that people aren't like, oh, Hector didn't say anything.
It's only fun for Sarah. It's just poor for Hector. Poor Hector. Well, I feel like there should be a segue into going from like, we are happy to. Our topic today is digital discouragement.
Okay. Womp, womp. I'm going to put some womp, womp effects there. Womp, womp,
womp. You don't even need it. You don't even need sound effects. I just did a good one. Womp, right. Womp, womp. Okay. Digital discouragement. So I was having a conversation with some people and in the DMs about how they just avoid the timeline, Twitter's timeline. I know that is, I feel like how I engage in Instagram and Facebook, it's not like, I don't just hop on there to only deal with Messenger. Yeah. It's just the formatting is different. And the app, because the app, you have a separate Messenger app than you do the main app. It doesn't feel like you don't have to go through the main app to get to your messages. So I feel like it's a little different. But anyway, the conversation was basically like they get on the timeline and it's just discouraging.
Yeah.
And so they just hang out in the DMs. They have conversations over here to the side by themselves and they don't even want to go out there and have conversations on the timeline. I also know people, I had a conversation with my life group here in town. And they talked about how they just will upload their picture of, you know, their kids playing basketball or whatever. And then they go on. They don't ever like scroll anymore because it's just so discouraging. And they don't want to make anybody mad ever because it's just not worth it to them. And I have felt like that where I have kind of poked my head out and then gone back into the DMs because the timeline or the or the wall or whatever can get so incredibly toxic. And I think it's a good time to have this conversation because I'm starting to hear people talk about how they're concerned with the coming election season, that this is just going to be more of the same and it's just going to be worse and worse and nobody wants to deal with it. Have you ever felt that way?
Yeah. Yeah, I have. And
yeah,
I think one of the, that main concern of like, did we learn anything?
Like, yeah.
Did we learn anything? Because it wasn't just an observing, but like, what do we do going forward? I guess is the like, will we do anything going forward? I hear as the concern, you know, like, is it just going to be a lot of the same, even worse, especially right now in like specifically Twitter? Like, is it just going to be worse because people feel free to say whatever they want? I felt that way.
Yeah. So what gets me is less about the, I get less discouraged by the random political opinions that I disagree with, although I know that there are people who get discouraged by that, and more discouraged by the disharmony amongst believers on display for all.
Yeah.
I remember I was hanging out at a friend's house, and this is probably like 10 years ago, and their neighbors started to have a big old fight in the yard. I think that they ended up having the police come and help them to settle the debate. And I just remember, like, when that's going on, you sort of like subtly just stick your head out the garage, or, you know, maybe it's not everybody else's nature, but I'm a little nosy by nature. So I remember just like watching and checking occasionally to see what was going on, because when there's a fight outside, it's just really, I don't want to say enjoyable to watch, but it's, it draws
peaks the people. Interest. Yeah. Peaks the interest. Yeah.
And I just, sometimes when I get on the feed, I feel like I'm watching people throw things around their yard.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. I've done that before.
You've thrown things around your yard?
Metaphorically. Not no, but metaphorically, absolutely. So I guess that's the thing, right? Like, again, going back to that, like, will we do something about this? Will we learn something? There's like this passive, like, just let it happen. It's going to happen. And then there's the active, which, I mean, that's ministry. That is good, hard work, takes effort, takes pause to like, will we just be a part of the throwing things around the yard party, or will we contribute to, hey, what happens when all the stuff, like when we're all done and tired of throwing all the stuff, like, what do we do then? Will we have any energy left to help pick up the pieces? And then what do we do from there? Do we just ignore it? Like, do we just say like, man, last Friday, you know, saw all the sirens, saw everything going on, and we're just going to ignore it? Or like, in some way, what will we do to say like, it happened, there's a better way, and what can I do to move towards that?
I was sort of wondering, because online is a place where it's truly non-denominational. Like, we call things non-denominational in person churches, but my experience is that 9 times out of 10, a non-denominational church is actually Baptist. And then the one other time they're, I don't know, something else. Like, online, you actually get a true non-denominational experience because people are engaging across denominational lines. And that happens more naturally online than it does in person. In person, I live outside of town. Between my house and our church, which is at the edge of town, I pass 2 other churches. In one church, I know one family that goes there. I know them through school. And the other church, I know nobody who goes there, as far as I know. So the only interaction I have, and those churches are full of my brothers and sisters in Christ. They're full of family. And I don't have the slightest who they are. And the only connection I have to them is through the schools. The church just drives past itself every Sunday to go feast at its favorite table.
Yeah.
But you don't do that online. You cross the lines. And so I understand that it is I wonder sort of what our denominations and how the different denominations manage conflict and manage disagreement between them, how much that plays into how people handle conflict between Christians online.
Yeah.
So for instance, I know that there are churches that if you have an issue with the church, they will put you in front of the church and have a conversation about it. You know, if you say I'm out, you're going to have a conversation in front of the whole church about it. And then there are other churches where you just stop coming, you know, you just go to the, and nobody ever says two words about it. You could have been there since the day you were born. You stopped coming. And it's just like, well, I think I heard that they are fishing on Sundays. I don't know. Nobody ever checks on you. They just let you go. And so like, those are two ends of a spectrum. One feels like you should have held on to that person with more care. And the other is like, you are really holding on real tightly to that person. Yeah. And neither of them feel great. But do you feel like, I had never thought about it when I'm watching it happen online, but do you feel like our training in the church and conflict management plays into that?
Absolutely. And I think I was actually having a conversation with someone who they're recently in the workplace, and there's so many different like limitations on what can and can't be done and how it's done. And like there's standards and a structure. And it felt freeing to be like, oh, if there's a disagreement and it's like I'm able to like talk to this person and do this thing. And they hadn't had that before. And the freedom, and even how like the response once something was brought up was absolutely, and of course, this is how we do things here. And so there was just that, like in other places in our world, in our culture, for us, it's specifically American culture, but there are these things put in place and trainings put in place. And if we don't have them in the church, like, yeah, absolutely. I think that conflict resolution just won't happen. Like, it's not even about good or bad. It's just, it won't happen.
Yeah. There was a period in my life where I felt like I had a lot of thoughts about things I disagreed about, but I didn't feel like I had the freedom to disagree where it felt like disagreement wasn't encouraged. I remember like I would go and I would sit in, I would go watch football and just be able to disagree freely and like scream my opinion.
Yeah.
And it was, that sort of thing is not just like tolerated, but encouraged. That's how you behave in stands. And I don't know that we should be screaming our opinion and disagreeing freely without thought in the church, particularly not when like it would really disturb the, I mean, I don't think that Sunday mornings are the right time to act like you're at a football game, but
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Even though some people would, right? Oh my goodness, right. The Super Bowl's here. Who's your team? And you should be that excited this morning.
Yeah.
That's not what we're talking about.
If you were as excited for your team about Jesus, you are for your Super Bowl team.
Yeah.
Oh, my mind just went to the crossover of marketing for Super Bowl and marketing for Jesus. That's not what we're talking about today. But, you know, good fun thoughts. Anyway, people I think are afraid in the church are afraid of conflict.
Yeah.
And I don't know that we are training our people well in how to have conflict in a healthy manner. I mean, you look at Paul and John Mark.
Yes.
And they had a big old disagreement and they had to go their separate ways. And eventually at the end of his life, like Paul commends Mark as like this this great dude, but there was a point in time in their life that they had to take a break from each other. And so even the Bible shows that like not every conflict and that like that instance doesn't follow the like the church prescription for discipline, where it's like, well, if you have a disagreement, go to the person first and then take two or three. And if you can't work it out, then kick them out. Like Paul didn't boot John Mark out. They went their separate ways, and with him went a strong leader. They just needed their space. Yeah. And so like, I think it's good to see that even the Bible shows that not every conflict, there's not a prescription for how to handle every conflict.
Right.
I can't remember if you were talking before we started recording or after. I think it might have been before, but you had started talking about unity. And so I want to talk about unity and what that looks like online, because we don't have unilaterally great training on how to handle conflict. We don't have unilateral agreement on how to handle conflict in the church. And we don't have, yes, unilateral exposure to the global church. Yeah. And you have that online. Yeah. So what do you think, I want to talk about what does unity look like and then how does that apply online?
Yeah. Well, I think, all right, I'm processing here. And so I might say something and like immediately backtrack, but I think it's hard because like when we say, well, we're unified by the gospel. Okay, but what definition of gospel? What parameters of gospel? Because depending on who you're talking to online, that means so many different things. And I think we have to, what does unity look like online? I think for those of us who have come to an understanding that we are not the end-all be-all gatekeeper of what Jesus wants to do, what the Holy Spirit wants to do in the world, and who or who doesn't get to walk through the doors of the kingdom. I think to be unified is to humbly submit and say that the people across the table or in a different seating chart in the room, I don't know. I'm just trying to be thorough with how I say this, is to actually walk through, like to actually walk the walk of the talk of like, we're unified for the gospel, for the kingdom. And the way that that works out is the way that Jesus said, here are the greatest commandments. Love God, love your neighbor. If we can be for that and then everything else fall under that, then we can work towards being unified. But when we make anything else the thing we're unifying around, whether that is prayer in schools or I don't know, just anything. And I don't want to just attack one side, right? That's not what this is about. But when we hold tightly to something other than what Jesus said would unify us, and ultimately that's him, I think we should do the opposite of that. That makes sense. Like whatever is not working right now, we have to move towards what is the opposite of that. I'm processing right now. That's a question that like I have an answer to, but I think in real time to try to be succinct is like really hard for me. So.
Well, you were talking about like humility. I was working in Ephesians this week, Ephesians 4. And I tell you what, I have like cried repeatedly reading this chapter this week. It has just been very much convicting me. So I'm going to read this and see if this has any, see if you have any thoughts from it. So Ephesians 4:1 says, and then going on, as a prisoner for the Lord, then I urge you to live a life worthy of the calling you have received. Be completely humble and gentle, be patient, bearing with one another in love. Make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. There is one body and one Spirit, just as you were called to one hope when you were called, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is over all and through all and in all. And then I'm going to skip down to verse 14. Then we would no longer be infants tossed back and forth by the waves and blown here and there by every wind of teaching and by the cunning and craftiness of people and their deceitful scheming. Instead, speaking the truth in love, we will grow to become in every respect the mature body of him who is the head, that is Christ. From him, the whole body, joined and held together by every supporting ligament, grows and builds itself up in love as each does its work. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, letting people, I mean, having the humility to say people have different roles, they have different responsibilities, they have different people that they are called to. Like, not everybody online has to be called to online ministry. And like, if I walked in there and was like, I care passionately about online ministry and I demand that every last one of you care about online ministry the way I do, well, the world is wider than the internet. And we need people who have different vision and different passions, but we need to be respectful of that. And so there are a couple things in that. There was one, it starts off and it talks about how we are to keep the unity. Like, we're not pursuing unity. We're not like a body part puzzle that you have to pop together. It's not like you pulled the Barbie head off and then you're trying to stick it back on the doll, which is very hard. Hector, I don't know if you ever pulled the Barbie head off, but it's like when a Barbie head comes off, that's it.
It's hard.
That's
to get it.
That thing ain't going back. I feel like that'll preach. Like, you pull the head off the body. Woo!
Ain't Woo! Never gonna be the same.
Okay. No, it's not. Once I did that, and then I tried to like cut the neck down so that it would fit over, and then I got the head back on, but it just bobbled. It wasn't great. So you got to keep the head on the body, which Ephesians just told us the head is Christ. So that's important. We're not trying to pursue unity and figure it out and put us all together. And like, if we get to heaven and we put something in the wrong place, like some sort of survivor challenge, then we fail. Like, God's already done the work of unifying us, and our job is to protect the unity that Christ already worked out for us. So respecting other people's calling to different calls than your own, other people's roles, I think is important, very important.
Well, I'm reading back through it, and just the idea that, like, okay, so, you know, oh, well, I mature in more faith because I know more, right? Okay, well, when we're knowledge of the Son of God, right? So until we all reach unity in the faith and in the knowledge of the Son of God and become mature, attaining to the whole measure of the fullness of Christ, right? Attaining to this standard, this, like, the measure is not about knowledge. The measure is not about how much, not just scripture, but then, well, you know, practically, how does this lived out? Like, the measure is how much do we look like the person of Jesus, right? And the very next words are, and then we will no longer be infants. We will no longer act as children bickering back and forth. We will no longer act as children, you know, pushing one another down so that we're the one who gets attention. We're the ones who are seen as most important, right? So there's this check and balance almost. Is like, you could read that and say, absolutely, I know so much about Jesus, and so I'm mature. And it's like, well, there's the humility piece of like, do you act like a child? Does your is the your faith walked out childish? Because then, well, you haven't actually reached maturity. And that's not a, like, I'm just trying to point that out, like, that there is a maturity. Like, what does a fully grown Christian look like, right? What does a mature Christian look like? And it's just not an infant.
So leading up through the week, I thought, how can we have this conversation and not be like, so, you know how there were these people who were fighting and we're going to be like, not mentioning anything about anybody so that nobody gets offended and then gets mad at us. This morning, I think that a really good example is not to say like, here's where it's failing, but to say like, okay, so I don't want to talk about the article, which this all stems from. I don't ever want to talk about the article.
It is just the article.
It is just the ick, the ickiest of icks. And no, thank you. But is it a direct portion from the book that's about to be released? Or is it like a portions of the book are in the article?
I don't know. And the original article is no longer up.
Is the article down or just the tweet about it?
No, the article now says something like, we recognize that this, so it was basically portions of a chapter, it sounds like. And
if they took it down, I would be wildly impressed or wildly surprised, pleasantly surprised. I don't know. Anyway, the thing I was thinking about was how a post I saw this morning that had looked at the people who had endorsed the book that the article was coming from, and that was the article is pointing people to the release of this new book. This person tagged the people who'd endorsed it. And it was very, like, very possible that those people could have ignored it, and very possible that those people could have argued and said, well, like, this guy's my friend. And I mean, I get what he's saying. We've had conversations. You had the conversations with him. You'd endorse it too. And you probably just aren't endorsing it because you're a girl or something. Or whatever reason, you're woke or not part of our group or whatever. But there were, like, I'm seeing people, I can't remember his last name, but his name's Rich, and he had endorsed it, and he made a statement and said, you know, he had been given just a portion of the book, and he had read that portion, and it didn't include what was in the article, and he admitted what he had done, and he asked forgiveness. It was really, I mean, just like there's a time and place for screaming, like you don't, it's not really great to scream on Sunday mornings. Like that would be a good example of the kind of church discipline that's more the style of the churches that call people in front and say, we're going to have a conversation about this either in front of the board or in front of the church. And sometimes the churches are so small that the board is the church, but having that conversation publicly. And then it allowed for people to say, well, the person who wrote it is involved in this organization. And the original tweeter then said, well, here's what they have done to manage it. They didn't allow speculation or bad things to be said about this other organization. They like took the time to clarify, these are the steps that they've made. And so when people are addressing what she has said, you need to address this, she is saying like, they are addressing it. And that, I think that was a really mature, like when Ephesians talks about we're going to be mature, and she's holding her thread steady so that it's not being tossed back and forth. People aren't speculating and turning it into.
She said,
or a big hate fest. So I think that that one's a really good example of managing conflict publicly well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's part of it too, is that like, I think I've always gone back to, you know, as Jesus is introducing the Sermon on the Mount, or in the beginning of it, he talks about live a life. You're the salt and light of the world. We all know that part. But at the end of that passage, paragraph, recorded quoting of Jesus, his teaching, he says, essentially, live your life in such a way that those who you come across would glorify God's name, like would give thanks for who God is. And I think, like, there's this, because even in this Ephesians passage is like, you won't be, you know, following the ways of the world. But I think we take that and like, sometimes the world does what we ought to be doing in the church like they're closer to what that looks like than what the church is doing. You know, like they're closer mm-hmm. to that ideal. They're closer to that command that God has given than we are. Or like Paul's writing, you know, I want to be clear, like this is Paul's writing, not God's, but Paul is saying, hey, this is how we ought to conduct ourselves. And yet from the outside looking in, it's the classic, right? Like, why would I want to follow Jesus? You're no better than we are, right? And all the infighting and all the can't take accountability for our words, can't take accountability for our actions. And we do that in Jesus' name, right? Oh, well, Jesus covered it, so I don't have to say anything. Jesus covers it, and this is an internal thing, when really it's like, no, it was done publicly. And so on some level, there has to be a public account of, hey, we want to make this right, you know?
Yeah. Okay.
We're done talking about the article.
I don't ever want to talk about that article. That article was a disappointment. It was discouraging. So anyway, we've talked about like what unity is and how like it matters that we are unified, not just that it matters that we present a unified front, but it matters that we're actually unified. Yeah. Between here and when we get our acts together, like there's just times that it's discouraging. And I don't know that regular is the word I want, but in a regular church, if you were to have open conflict, generally people who feel discouraged about it just bounce, or they don't come for a while and then they might check back in. And if they're still arguing, they're just going to bounce, or they'll boot out the person causing the conflict. That's sort of how that goes. And unless you're going, so there, the equivalent to that would be like, you're going to block people or you're going to quit and go over to
XYZ church.
One of these, well, the online one, you'll go over to the new platform where you can say what you want to say.
Yeah.
And people can't, you know, whatever. But like in the online community, it's a lot harder just to bounce, like, because it feels like it's like one big church. And there are some places where there's like pockets.
Yeah.
There's just like you have one church has different ministries. There's pockets. Yeah. But you're all still existing in the one same space. And so when this stuff is going on, you're just exposed to it, and it's discouraging. So, boy, Hector, I am hoping you have all the answers, because I am just as guilty as the next person for just going and hiding in the DMs.
Yeah.
Because I get discouraged. Is hiding, like, is taking a break wrong? Do we have to be engaging and trying to make things into healthy discourse all the time? If we go and we hide from it, do we, like, what responsibility do we have for the time we took away from creating a healthy environment out there? Like,
yeah, I think, okay. So I've been thinking a lot about like digital pastoring. What is digital pastoring? I was listening to the conversation I got to have with Will Soto a few weeks ago. And so I've just been in this space of like refining like some of that, especially because of everything that has happened online, all the online things. We talked about like the online, the boundaries, the limits, or the scope of what an online pastor is rooted in what like in-person pastor is, and the role that a pastor plays, and ultimately it's a shepherd. And I think there are times where it's okay to take a break. It's okay to not have to always speak on something. I'm guilty of doing that sometimes, but ultimately it comes down to like, if you don't know for a fact it's not affecting the people that are in your circle that have placed trust in you, as a friend, as a peer, as a spiritual leader in their life, you have a responsibility to figure that out. And so I think it's okay to go to the DM where there's a safe space and say, here's where I'm at. I may not address this in public, but I want to at least share where I'm at because of these things and these scriptures, or, you know, these other disciplines as well. I don't want to exclude other disciplines, especially when we're talking about communities that have been built where the research shows that most of the people around you are stressed, anxiety. There's a higher chance than ever before that people are traumatized. And so if you don't at least figure out like the smallest circle you're a part of, whether or not like it's affecting them, and you want to be a leader of any kind, you want to be just leading your community. Let's not even say that you're the leader in power. You're just helping to shape your community. I think that I would say all of that to say that I think it's okay to fall back from the main timeline sometimes, so long as you understand that in your private conversations, in your most trusted spaces, that if you're not talking about it, or you're talking about it in a way that is irresponsible, then we just have a lot of evaluating to do, you know? Because I don't want anyone to be discouraged of like, well, what if I just say something that's already been said and I don't feel like that's okay. But if in your group messages or Discord groups or whatever online community you found, and if you're not addressing it, you know.
It's also, we need to be able to unburden ourselves from feeling that we are responsible for releasing a statement on everything. Like,
okay, so like, let's put this week into perspective, right? There are leaders who, as a Lenten practice, have taken a break from social media, taken an absolute break. Now, they may be told, hey, this thing's going on online, but in their own personal boundaries, they're like, well, I've laid it down. Right. And are we to say, well, now they've got to come on for a week to process and lead? And there's going to be people that are like, all of these things are going to pass them by. They will have no idea. And for them to then have to burden themselves by, well, now I've got to go speak on everything that has happened. And the community has already processed, and now we're re-entering into some processing. Maybe we've already gotten past this point, right? And so it's this thing of like, can we give people the space to operate in their own limits? You know, I had a pastor who posted on Facebook, hey, has anyone like noticed in them a change in your mental and emotional capacity for hard things? And everyone's like, yeah, absolutely. And I had this thought of like, well, I don't even know if capacity is the right word, because were we at, did we have bigger capacities before, or we just made aware of our limits and that we were putting too much on ourselves anyway, right? And like now we're made more aware of that because collectively we were. And so we have to push back against the temptation to go back into that overburdening and over giving ourselves too much things and the emotions, right, of getting caught up in everything and having to say something and having to process everything publicly. I'm not saying that there isn't a space for people, especially like those who endorse the book. That's a public endorsement. That is your name, your ministry, your church, your church networks, your further writings, your further leadership. the people in your life groups, like, absolutely those should be public. When you feel there's been a misstep, when you feel that there has been, like, even a misguided misstep, because it's coming out that, like, yeah, the parts of the book that were sent for review were not these. And so you start to wonder, like, how much of that was on purpose, right? You have all these things that you can start going down. I think ultimately, yeah, it just comes down to are you going to take care of yourself too? Like, that's got to be a question that is asked, you know. Does that make sense? Yeah. I feel like that was all over the place.
No, it does. Like, I mean, I used to say a lot, you know, you can't draw out of an empty mm-hmm. well. So, like, if you don't have, and like, you ain't the only well on the block. Like, and sometimes it's not appropriate for you to be the well that's mm-hmm. drawn out of. Like, sometimes it's not your place to speak into things.
You don't have to speak into everything. And you also, like, if there is a conflict in your church, if Jimmy and Johnny have some dispute over land, okay, you go help them work it out, but you don't go and knock on the door of every person at your church and say, hey, I just want to hear what you think about Jimmy and Johnny's land dispute. Yep. You know, people can have thoughts and opinions, and it's okay just to, and they can even talk about their thoughts and opinions, but it's just not wise to go invite the opinion of everybody. And in times when everybody is giving their opinion all at once, I think it's got to be wise to put some limits on it. Particularly, and I think about, like, I have to put some limits on where TikTok is concerned, because TikTok can very easily be like, here, okay, so Sarah, what you're interested in is toddlers saying cute things, baby animals or pandas, lots of like pandas. You're also interested in clean comedy and wrestling, and then also, like, the scariest, baddest presentation of disastrous news. And so and also capybaras, which I'm not interested in. And so, like, you can click, I'm not interested on these things. I have not clicked that on capybara, and that's my own fault that I continue to get them, because I have not specifically said to TikTok, I'm not interested in this giant gopher thing. Like, I'm not. I like that other people are, but I'm not. But also, like, I can only take in so much information about war and train derailment and politics and scary things at schools, and like, and if that is the only thing I'm consuming, like, it will consume me. And it's like, it stops being something I'm feeding on, and it feeds on me, and it's terrible. And so we have to be able to place healthy limits. And if you're at a place where you get on social media and it's just like, I'm discouraged, I get on here, I'm worse for being on here, then it's wise to not be on there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think often sometimes too, like, I don't want to go there. I'm good.
Was this about not picking at things?
A little bit. Yeah, a little bit. You know, I think, okay, you know,
you'll never, I mean, there are things that are meta narrative for our world, war and train derailment. And then there are things that are the narrative of our lives that truly do impact us, that we truly need healing from. Like in the healing process, if somebody walks up to you and hits you with a baseball bat, and then you have to go to the hospital to heal up from being hit by a baseball bat, they don't heal you by lightly hitting you with a baseball bat. You know? And so when you're in the healing process from things that have happened where you are face to face with people, and then you are discouraged by the online interactions you have with people. So it's not just the church online, but it's the church that's down the street, or the church that was down the street. And you see how those people engage online. Like, don't lightly hit yourself with a baseball bat. Don't pick at a scab that's healing.
Yeah.
You know, let it be.
Yeah. Absolutely. Thanks. Thanks, Sarah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So I sort of thought when I thought we should talk about this, I thought that the conclusion I was going to come to was like, well, if you're discouraged, like, here is a healing thought so that you can get right back out there. But that's not where I'm leaning. I think I even like 20 minutes ago, I pulled up here in a different window. I was like, it is March. It's Dr. Seuss month. And like, here's what we should take from that is, like, you know, the Lorax says, unless someone like you cares a whole awful lot, nothing is going to get better. It's not. And that's true. We each have our part to play, but we don't have to play the part all the time. Yeah. And it was like, it started with one. The Lorax, how theological can we get with the Lorax? The Lorax started with one guy, and he made a change. And then other people changed, but he didn't do all the changing and just drag the world behind him. Like, everybody else had to care. He showed his care in front of people, like they saw, and then that inspired others to care as well. So it does start with one person, but that one person should not, we are not, I mean, Christians are little Christs, but like, Jesus is the one who does all the work. He's the one who climbed up on the cross and died. And we don't need to climb up on the cross. He did that work already.
Yeah.
So that we could live full lives, not so that we would be martyring ourselves day and night for causes that he.
Well, I think part of it is that there are causes that are worthwhile. We can't be at the helm of all of them. Personally.
Yes. Yes. And I didn't want to say like causes he didn't call us to, because they are causes he called us to, but like, I just think about the times that like you hear people say, well, if you put your hand to the plow and look back, then you're not worth it. You're not worth the plow. But it's like, Jesus, God is not a cruel master. For one, and for two, when you plow a field, you go back and forth and you use where you've come to guide where you're going. And so reflection is part of it. And none of the farming analogies that Jesus used is he like, and then the guy who represents God is forcing the people who represent us to work and bleed out on the field.
It's just not
a parable he told, because that's not the kind of God he is, and it's not the kind of people that we should be
absolutely
to one another or to ourselves.
Yep. Yeah, I've been thinking about as far as community goes, and like if anyone's individual thriving means someone has to, like, not just sacrifice, but it means that somebody is suffering, like, in a way that is not okay. In a way that if the other individual was suffering, we would go, I shouldn't be suffering that way in this community. But we're willing to put someone else on that altar of sacrifice. Like, yeah, it's not good thriving, right? And so if you having to, like, to bring us back to, like, those initiatives and those causes and those disagreements, if it's causing you to lose sleep in a way that isn't about, like, I really feel passionate about this and I am equipped and called to do something about it. If it's just like, I have to say something about it, so I'm a good Christian. I have to say something about it because, like, if you're motivation to speak on something is not from the Lord initially or at some point in the journey, like, and it's causing you to suffer in a way that is not healthy, and I want to make the distinction. I think we're called to make sacrifices, we're called to suffer, we're called to place things, you know, to let go of things if it means living in the kingdom way. But if it's doing so in a way that someone's not thriving and is actively, like, being brought down and hurt and harmed, then no one's thriving. Like, that we can pretend all day, but no one's thriving.
Yeah. So probably to sum up, we have a responsibility as the church, as each of us, and as a community, we have a responsibility to handle conflict appropriately, but not every conflict needs to be handled publicly. And I would say it's probably, in my opinion, the rare conflict that needs to be handled publicly.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the situation that I referenced about tagging the endorsers of the book is different. I think that if you are going to take it public, like, I feel like you almost need the consent of the other person to be dragged into that conversation publicly. I don't think that we should be like, if you want to hear what other people, let other people weigh in on it, but that should be really far down the road. And you should understand that you are taking someone into public without their consent. Even the churches that do the, you have to come and speak in front of the board, or you have to come and speak in front of the church and ask for their forgiveness, like, they invite you to that.
Right.
They don't, like, walk up. They don't, at least as far as I understand, they're not like, hey, why don't you come to the church at 7 p.m. tonight? I have a basket full of candy for you. And you show up, but the whole church is there, and then they force you. And they say, hey, this is what this guy has done wrong, and I'm real mad about it. Yeah. Like, the conversation is an invitation.
Yeah. And we are talking about, just so that people know, we are talking about healthy churches with healthy conflict resolution structure. Yeah. We're not talking about abuse. We're not talking about, you know, being put on the spot, or, you know, like, we're talking about healthy churches. Yeah.
And that's a good distinction to make, because that's not that I have been to probably 20 different denominations in the course of my life, but I've never been to one that uses that style of conflict management. But I know so many people who that is the conflict management route that their church takes.
Yeah.
So I want to be respectful that I understand that. And I have heard people say that that was a healthy part of it for them.
Yeah.
So I don't want to discount their experience. But also, I don't have that experience. And I know that that has been unhealthy for other people. So that's a really good distinction to make.
Well, and it ties back to, I was actually having the thought before we started recording, we were talking about the difference between making a mistake in leadership and owning it, and then just having either poor leadership skills or willingly just being a non-leader, just like not taking initiative as a leader is, it's lazy, it's cowardice. There's the word, it's cowardice to not actually lead in humility and own mistakes for the simple fact that sometimes we make mistakes because we don't have life experience. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we make mistakes because we're not taking stock of the entire situation or the entire way that our words and actions will have consequences. And if we'll have the humility to do that, I don't think we need to strip anyone of their leadership title or position. But it's when we deny that we don't make mistakes, that we don't listen to criticism, that we don't. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah.
I was going to go off on a tangent. I'm sorry.
I was self-censoring
right now. that was no baseball taps. No baseball taps.
That's right. Put down the bat. And then the other thing, the summation for the other part is just like, it's okay to take a break. I just think about how, is it Isaiah who was like, it's right after what, Jezebel? And then Isaiah like wandered. It's right after. It's like, we got the fire business. Oh, come on. You know what I'm referencing?
No.
Anyway, he's like, they're like, Baal is so much better than Yahweh.
Yeah.
And then God did all this thing. And then Isaiah is like, I got to peace out. Jezebel is like, I'm mad about it. And she's going to come get it. It might be Jezebel, might not be Jezebel. I can't remember. But he heads himself out into the desert. He has his buddy with him. And then he goes, like, he stops, he naps and takes a nap. He gets some food. He has a first conversation about like, what do you feel like you need to tell God with, the angel of the Lord? And he's like, I'm doing this all by myself.
It was Elijah.
Like, Elijah. Yes. Thank you. I was like, I'm saying the wrong name, but I couldn't get the right name. Okay. So, and I was like, it's the one that sounds like the other one. And I had to decide which one of the two it is. And I went with the third that is not the one at all. And then I was trying in my head at the same time to figure out, how do you say Isaiah, but not say it right? Isaiah? No, it's not. Okay. So Elijah. Okay. And he's like, the problem is I'm doing this all by myself and I am sick of it. And so then he goes on a little further and then he speaks to the Lord and the Lord's like, what's up? And he's like, I'm doing this by myself and I am sick of it. And God's like, uh-huh. All right. I've put like 4,000 people down there. Like, why don't you just go down there and talk to them? Like, you're not actually alone. Like, it's not all on your shoulders.
Yep.
Boy. I hope nobody forever holds it against me that I got his name wrong. That's all I'm going to think about.
I'll take it up with you in person one day.
The what?
Never mind.
Okay. Yeah, it's okay to take a break. You matter to God. And even when we're doing it to ourselves, like, he's going to show up with a nap and a sandwich and 4,000 people to do it with us. And if there's one thing the internet has, it's people.
Yeah.
Any closing thoughts, Hector?
No.
Okay. Well, you know what I would like to do, Hector?
What would you like to do?
I'm going to say a prayer.
Okay.
All right. God, I thank you for the conversation I've gotten to have with my friend Hector. We want to lift up the church to you right now for those who are hurting each other and who are hurt by others. Father, we pray that you will begin the work of healing and restoration where we are able, put us to the work of restoration and reconciliation. Help us to know when to speak and when to be quiet. Help us to know when to say something publicly and when to say something privately. Help us be wise. And Father, for the discouraged, I ask that you would give them rest, that you would refuel them and refill them, that you would show them that they're not alone, and that you would encourage those who feel specifically called into online ministry when it feels overwhelming and it feels like it's too big and too much. Father, I pray that you will help them see the small pieces of online ministry, the one person that they're helping, the one small group that they're helping, and show them that that matters and that that is a portion of it, and show them that they're not alone in this. In Jesus' name we pray, by your Spirit. Amen.
Amen. Hey, thanks for exploring with us today. And we'll see you next week.
Bye.